Good morning, everyone. So today is the last week of this series, but there's another session next week, a special session, as I talked about last week. We'll remind you in a minute, but let's just start with a review, first of all. So last week, we talked about the whole topic of pleasing others, and which can be a really negative thing about not defining yourself by the perception of other people. It's a weakness, because also it means that a person can't be assertive when they need to be, and so on. And of course, we said that we talked a lot about the modern literature that has jumped onto this bandwagon and over-exaggerated the whole concept of self-care and creating boundaries and so on. But the truth is that we do need to consider others, and we talked about the concept of Olam Chesed Yibaneh, that the world is built on kindness, born to give. That's part of being a life of purpose, even when it's uncomfortable. And of course, we need the self, but the self is there to give to others, and that was the analogy of the ambulance, that the ambulance needs to stop and get gas, but you wouldn't define an ambulance the way you define an ambulance, by giving help to other people. The only thing we need to understand is that although we do take into account other people, but the idea is to aspire or to work towards that it should be coming from a place of strength rather than a place of weakness, because then when we need to be strong, we can be. But really, the focus of life is about living for something other than ourselves, higher than ourselves, for other people, and so on. Just before we start today, I just want to go through a couple of announcements, and that is, so next week, as I said last week, we have a special pre-Rosh Hashanah. Please spread it, tell it to your friends, tell to come, everyone to come. We're going to have coffee, we're going to have some nice, delicious treats from Felicia, and also we're going to share some words of inspiration, including Dina, who will be here also to share some thoughts. Exactly, that's the highlight. So it's not going to happen very often, so come, make sure you come. This coming Monday night, we have a home shiur at the home of Nikki Resnick. It's on all the WhatsApps. By the way, in case you're wondering why you haven't got a broadcast from me for the last few days, it's because WhatsApp has become very anti-Semitic. No, I mean that as a joke. But no, I mean as a total joke. Because they've now put a thing where you can only send a certain amount of broadcasts a month. And it's made for people like me that we send so many broadcasts a dinner that suddenly one day I woke up, you can't send anymore, you've covered your 35 broadcasts for the month. So I probably got to wait till the end of the month and start again. But I haven't gone away. But there's still WhatsApp groups, and we're fine. We're managing. Second day, Rosh Hashanah, will be hopefully confirmed today. We have a bit of issues with places, but looks like we're getting there. So we should be out today. So put that in your diary if you want to come, as many of you do, to the special minyan that we have for the explanations and inspiration and shofar and so on. That's the second day, Rosh Hashanah, the 13th of September. And also, need to put into your diary now before everything else gets in the way. There's so much happening in town, so we've got to get in early these days. Sukkot. So Sukkot is Tuesday morning, the 29th of September. I mean, Sukkot is 8 days, but the thing in our sukkah we do every year at home is Tuesday, 29th of September. So please diarize that and come along. All right, so today we were looking at the five saboteurs which can be channeled to become sages. Today we look at the last two. The first one we're going to look at very briefly, and then we're going to go more into the second one. So the fourth one is try harder. The person that always wants to try harder. So on the one hand, that can be a problem. Why? Anyone wants to suggest why? So you're never satisfied? Okay. So we said we have to be satisfied.
You asked for an answer.
No, I'm challenging. I don't know. I'm asking. No. I mean, yes, the way they put it is you never celebrate. You have time to celebrate your success. I'm not sure how much time we have to dedicate to that, but it's certainly important to understand our accomplishments. In fact, it's interesting, you know, that we're in the month of Elul, which is the month of Cheshbon. We've talked about this lots before. Where you reflect on yourself, you take stock, you know, you evaluate yourself and so on. And the previous Lava Shreba wrote very clearly, says a proper cheshbon has to be that you don't only look at your shortcomings, you actually look at your strong points as well. So that's true, I suppose. What else? What else can be a problem with always trying harder? It's a difficult one because it sounds like a good thing, trying harder, right? But it can cause delay. In other words, it's never enough, so you never quite finish. Also, I guess it's balance in life. It's a person who wants to, for example, if you're at a job and you're working at that job, you never leave the office. And that also moves into judging other people who do. So like, you know, you think that people who are not working like a workaholic, then they're slacking off. And not necessarily they're slacking off. It could be they're just working and they're finished. They've got other things to do as well. So that could be a problem. So I think we've spent a lot of time on this, but it's an interesting one. I think I told you this. After we did this test at Melbourne, this was my high score for some reason. So I have to work on making it a sage, not a saboteur. Anyways, can ask my wife about it. It's a little bit of a problem. Anyway, so once again, it depends what's driving the hard work, right? Like everything else. So if a person is working hard because of their own image to impress, or for example, some people are always trying harder and working extremely hard because they want to be in control, right? That's a problem. That's always a problem. That's always bad. Because on the other hand, working hard is a really important thing. We have a famous phrase that comes from one of the verses in Tanakh, Adam la'amel yulad, a person who is born to work hard. That's right. Hard work and stress are two different things. It's fine. Work is good. As we said the very first time, God created a world where we're here to fix it and a life of purpose, a mission, and it's hard. You know, struggles are hard. We've got to work hard in terms of our own personal growth. We've got to work hard to achieve. Working hard is important. However, I think what we have to channel it is, and when we talk about what's driving all of this, is the following. If it's about us, that's a problem. If it's not about us, if it's about our mission, then we work hard, but we realize that effort is just as important as outcome. We've talked about this, but this is a really important thing, right? Because it's not about that perfect and beautiful outcome. It's about working hard, and we should work hard. Working hard is part of responsibility. Working hard is part of achieving. Working hard is part of not wasting time. I don't only mean work hard in the office in terms of, you know, financial work or success, or whatever. I'm talking about just generally in life. It's not always easy. We need to put in effort, right? Responsibility comes with effort. But if it's about values, that working hard is a value and it's taking responsibility, then also it's got to also come together with other values, which is this thing I was saying before about a person who never leaves the office, the workaholic, right? If it's a value to work hard, but then there are other values in life, like family, like spiritual growth, like personal development, and things like that, health, whatever the case is, they're all values, they're all important things. And therefore, when your life is driven by values and not by one particular thing that's making you look good in the eyes of other people, then you will give time for all the values and you'll work out how to balance all the values. But that's because your life is value-driven, right? And if it's not, then working hard can become a problem because it becomes more of a thing that you need to succeed at. You know, in Pirkei Avot, even with regard to learning Torah, which we are taught that we're supposed to put in a lot of effort to study and to study God's wisdom and so on, but it says, it's a very beautiful phrase, that it says that you are not free to be absolved from the obligation of studying, but lo alecha hamelacha ligmor. It's not upon you to finish the job, right? What is upon you is to put in the effort. And that's how it works. The other thing, of course, is that's really important is that sometimes working hard is a problem because it's a control thing where a person honestly thinks that he or she are the one to accomplish, which from a Jewish point of view is fundamentally flawed, right? It comes from one of these week's parashas where God warns us. He warned the Jewish people before they went into Israel, where during the desert, they knew that it wasn't them because God provided for them, right? They didn't have to work. They didn't farm. They didn't work. They didn't launder. They didn't do anything. Everything was provided by the clouds of glory, by the manna that fell from heaven and so on. And God warned the Jewish people as they were about to enter the land. He said, you're going into a land, you're going to have to farm to get bread. You're going to have to work. You're going to have to do the normal things that everyone does in a physical world. And please God, you will be successful. But then you might come to a point where you say, Kochi ve'otsem yadi, my might, my power is what accomplished all the success. And that's the beginning of our downfall, right? So it's okay to work hard, but again, you've got to balance it with other values. And also, we can work hard, but also remember that at the end of the day, if you put in unnecessarily extra work, it's not going to make a difference. The brocha, the blessing, is going to come the way God wants it to come. If we make the appropriate vessel, we do the appropriate responsible thing, that's sufficient. We don't need to put in extra, and the extra is not going to accomplish anything. Yes, we've got to work hard for everything, and that's what God wants us to do in all areas of life, physical and spiritual, but it's really about God's blessing, and the more faith we have in that, that really it's up to God whether the blessing comes or not. We rely a little bit less on that extra hour, that extra half an hour, and start to live a more normal life, knowing that anyway it comes from Hashem. And when we do the responsible thing, the way He wants us to do it, the blessing comes, hopefully. All right, so that's just a little bit about that one. Now.
But don't you think that anybody who's really working hard doesn't see any of that? They just still think it's
if they're, yes, correct. They're working over hard.
I don't think they see it.
Well, it's hard for everyone to see it. It's actually quite a spiritual challenge, right? Mm. When you do something and you're not successful, okay, it's easy to blame it on God. But when you... When you do something, you are successful. We all have the tendency to say, oh, wow, what was
me?
Like I'm a pretty talented guy. I mean, that's the default of every human being. Sure. To really internalize, because it's kind of a little bit, it's actually a big theological discussion, because it's kind of a little bit of a paradox, right? God wants us to work. He wants us to put in the effort. He wants us to strategize like a normal human being does in any area of life. And then you strategize and it works. You say, no, it wasn't really me. That's hard, right? That's a hard thing, but it's true. In other words, he will give, because you know what? You know, I know it's true because, no, I know it's true because that's what the Torah says, but where you see it's true is that very often the response has very little to do with our strategizing. Like sometimes with the right emunah, the right pitachon, you try, you do the responsible thing, you strategize, the strategy doesn't work, and suddenly the blessing comes from a different place. That's when you realize it's actually got nothing to do with us. Sometimes it comes with the strategy, of course, but, right? So that's it's a little bit the what we call the paradox of bitachon and hishtadlut. Bitachon means total trust in God, but also putting in the effort. But the more trust we have in God, the more we realize that the abundant effort is not necessary, and therefore we dedicate times for things that are more important or equally important or important in general, right? So the workaholic, yes, it's almost impossible for them to see it because the reason that they're putting in the extra hours, the unnecessary hours, and taking away from their family and taking away from spiritual growth is because they believe it's their effort that's going to do it. If we really believe that it comes from God, we'd actually pay more attention to time put into godly things. Still working, still doing the effort because God wants us to do that. So it's a process. It's a journey of faith. It's a journey of really trying to come to terms with that, right? I think I've shared this with you before. You know where you see it more emphatically for some reason? In Shidduchim. And I've always heard this until I experienced it. I didn't actually totalize it, right? Where I, for few of my kids, you know, we do the Shidduch system and it requires a lot of research and work and finding out and getting someone to say yes and getting someone to say, yeah, I'll go out with your daughter or son even though they live in Australia because, you know, some people, Americans, don't want to look at Australia sometimes, right? All this kind of stuff. You put in the work and like you can... And I remember there was one of our children that was going very difficult. And my wife, correctly so, says, "You got to, this is something that's so important, you got to put it in your shtadlut." So you got to, every day she'll say, okay, what are you doing today? What are you, she's driving mad, what are you doing today? And she was 100% right. Yeah. And at the end, it came from completely left field.
Yeah,
completely left field. Someone saw something, someone said, I had an idea. Nothing to do with my effort at all. Mm. But because of the effort, in other words, God says, you put in the effort, and then don't worry, I'll manage. I don't need your effort to send it to you. I can manage a different way if I need to, right? But I want you to put it there. It's a responsible thing to do, especially in such a holy thing. So therefore, and more than once, we saw it so clearly. It was actually unbelievable. So yeah, it's interesting. But it can be with anything in life. Sometimes you can be in fundraising, you can be in work, generally, whatever you do. It's you put in the effort, and then suddenly it comes from somewhere else. If you believe, you got to surrender. That's part of the trick. You got to work hard at the same time saying, it's not me, I'm surrendering, I'm letting God run the world. But that's a difficult journey there, because you work hard, you want to be able to take the credit, and it doesn't quite work again. Okay. So the next one, and the last one, is an interesting one. And this I want to go through in a bit more detail, because actually we've touched on part of it many times, but nevertheless, it's an important thing, and I think maybe even particularly more relevant nowadays in the world we're living in and the year we had and the last few years we had and so on. Please God, coming into a much stronger and brighter year. And it's called be strong, right? The personality that people have sometimes is always be strong. You know, people like that, always strong. So that can be a real problem. It actually can be a big saboteur, even though being strong is a good thing in certain contexts. Let's talk about it. So first of all, what is the problem with always being strong? You don't let others in, that's number one, which means you don't let people help you sometimes, that's correct.
And so you push people away.
Push people away, creates division, yes. Sorry?
Can drain you.
Drain you, yes, it becomes emotionally draining.
You may not have empathy for people.
Oh, yes, very good. It can actually diminish your empathy for others. Because if you are so strong all the time, that's your way of operating, then it'll spill over to having lack of empathy for other people. Because you do it to yourself, so therefore you're going to do it to others as well. Just like, you know, they say, like, just put it together, get it together, you'll be okay, right? Is that what you meant? Yeah. Now, all these things are problematic. Why? First of all, also strong people, very according to them, it's an interesting one, can come across as blunt in communication. Like, it's always very blunt and matter of fact and stoic, and it's all good, right? So I think it's something worth revisiting. It's such an important topic, actually, right? Especially in the area of sort of well-being and what it all means. Because, yes, becoming a victim is not a good thing, but being so strong also isn't such a good thing. And let's understand how that works, right? What we need to understand is the following. First of all, being strong very often means when people are very strong, particularly right after pain, right? You know, there was a story a number of years ago in the religious community in New York in Flatbush. There was a family that suffered the most unimaginable loss. It was a whole thing. The husband was away for Shabbos, and there was a wife and a bunch of kids, and a fire broke out, and they couldn't escape, and one child survived, the rest didn't, and it was horrible, absolutely horrible, like unimaginable. And the husband came back, and he from where he was, and of course there was a funeral, a few, and he was speaking, and right away he started to speak with tremendous faith and strength, and I said right away, this is not good, really not good. And I say that because there's sources that tell us. Now, of course, we have to have faith all the time, but it depends how you express that faith. At different times, it's expressed differently, right? You can see this person is going to have real problems because it was completely unhealthy. Why do I say this? Because in our conscious experience, right, pain is often real. Now, I'm not talking about today, unfortunately, in the self-absorbed world, there's a lot of made-up pain. So I'm not talking about made-up pain, right? Made-up pain, often people just need a kick in the pants and that's it, finished. Right? I'm not talking about made-up, I'm talking about real pain, right? Real pain can be different levels of real pain, but real pain, there is real trauma around, there is real pain, there's real challenge. Financial loss even can be real pain, loss of a relationship, tragedy, all these things are real pain, right? That's a problem. Now, there are many values, Torah values, right, where just being strong is bad because it's escaping. It's escaping the pain. So why is that bad? Maybe it's good. Just be strong, right? So it's actually not true because what we have to understand is the following. We always say that everything that happens is bashkacha pratit and everything happens has a purpose. That's true. But also everything that God created in the world, Pirkei Avot says this, Kol ma shebara HaKadosh Baruch Hu, everything that God created has a purpose and is there to enhance the overall plan of making the world a godly place, which means that every single part of us is created with a purpose, including our feelings and our emotions, right? So when people are, because every part of us is there to contribute to our mission. If we live life with a purpose and we're living life with higher values, that means every part of the way God created me, every part of myself, not my egocentric self, but if I take away the ego part of it, every part that I have, every uniqueness, every skill, every emotion, everything that I have as part of my experience, cognition, emotion, act, whatever the case is, talents, whatever it is has a purpose. Otherwise, God wouldn't have created me with it. A unique purpose, right? And he created with me and all is there to contribute to the overall mission. Which means, therefore, that when someone suffers a painful experience and right away jumps into the mode of being strong, which equals suppressing the feelings, not giving them a chance to process those emotions and those feelings, they've done away with a part of their own personality. They've sent away part of themselves, ignored part of themselves, which can't be right because you've got to use every part of yourself. And if God gave us emotions and the natural emotion is to respond to a painful experience with pain, that has to itself become processed. It has to be felt. Now, it has to be felt in the right way. It has to be felt the way God wants us to feel. It has to be felt that it will contribute eventually to make me a stronger person and being able to live my mission in a greater way. That's true, but it's still got to be felt, right? So, for example, like we said before, Olam Chesed Yibaneh, that's right, the world was built on kindness. If an outcome of suppressing part of my emotion is the lack of ability to notice someone else's emotional journey and therefore not to have empathy, so then obviously we're doing the wrong thing. But it's more than that. It's not only about others, it's about ourselves also. If we can't use our emotions and channel them in positive direction because why? Because we've suppressed them, that's a problem. Because then we can't use them for good either. Right? You can say, I don't want to wallow in pain, so I'm just going to right away be strong. But then I won't be able to use my emotions for good things. I won't be able to express love properly. I won't be able to express emotion. Emotion plays such an important role. We've talked about this many times. God created us with emotions because emotions is our personality. It's who we are. It's what gives us passion, what gives us enthusiasm, what gives us a drive, what gives us so many things. And suppressing emotions to be strong in the face of challenge means that we suppress our emotion in general, and therefore we can't use them for the passion they're supposed to give us, for the enthusiasm they're supposed to give us, and so on. So that doesn't work. Which is why the Gemara says, and we've quoted this many times, but I want to just pick up on a word. The Gemara has a very strange expression when it mandates mourning, right? Grief, and processing grief, which we know the Torah is very, very emphatic on that, right? The Torah says, "Kol she'eino mitpalel." The Gemara says that anyone who doesn't mourn after a loved one, he's an achzari, he's a cruel person, which is a very harsh language to use. What do you mean a cruel person? I think what it means is, cruel person means what's a cruel person? A cruel person is someone that has no sensitivity. The fact that they can be cruel means they're not sensitive to the feelings of others. Suppressing your feelings completely in a time of pain is the preview of cruelty. Cruelty to yourself and ultimately cruelty to others because you don't have feelings. You're suppressing your feelings, and then you're harsh and strong. I mean, obviously at different levels, but it's still, it brings a certain level of cruelty. Cruelty is a strong language, but insensitivity or lack of empathy, whatever the case is. Because we can't process our emotions, and therefore we can't process the emotions of others. Now, I'm not talking about, as I said last week, I'm not talking about we've got to spend our whole day worrying about exactly which emotion we're feeling. That's not the point. But the point is we do need to process what happened. You know, when the Israeli teams were out here after Bondi, one of the most important things they said, they were talking, we had a few sessions with them, you know, these big teams from trauma experts from Israel. And the theme came up again and again, that the most important thing is processing. Process what happened. Don't ignore it. It's okay to feel bad. And for the first, they said, if you want to prevent PTSD at a later stage, one of the best ways to do it is early intervention. And they said the most important ingredient of the early intervention is process what happened. Go through it in your mind, process your emotion. You know, this, I'm not talking about emotions every day because someone looked at me wrong. I'm talking about real trauma, real pain. And the most important thing is, and it's true, those people who did that, they were definitely better off later, right? I remember for me, it was the most amazing thing because I wasn't doing it properly. Right away, I jumped into doing. And I had to fight, I had to do that, and I did, and it was amazing. I mean, not that the pain went away, but it was amazing, right? So that's such an important thing. That's why, so that's one aspect. Another aspect is of being strong is that people don't reach out for help, which goes counter to the world being built on kindness. Why? As we've said many times, a world built on kindness is a world where there's giving and receiving, and everyone gets a turn at giving, and everyone gets a turn at receiving. Not to become needy, but sometimes we have to receive. We have to receive when you want, when you're a big hero and a big martyr and you won't receive anything, you won't take any help, you're actually undermining God's plan, right? Of having the world being a place of kindness, because you can't have kindness if you can't facilitate giving. If you only have givers in the world, that's not gonna be no kindness. Because giving means giving and receiving. Now, it is a complicated thing because the Rambam tells us that it's best to be independent and not to be needy. That's true. We're not talking about being needy. So, yes, giving is almost always selfless. Not always, but it's almost always selfless. Therefore, you're pretty safe in the area of giving. In the area of receiving, okay, you have to reflect a bit more. Do I really need this? And it's important to drive everyone crazy to reach out to the help. But there are times where we do need to reach out for help. Otherwise, not only it's lack of empathy, but otherwise we're also not facilitating the mission of the world, which is Olam Chesed Yibaneh, the world built on kindness, because we're not facilitating. We're not giving people a chance to reach out. Which is why it's not a strength to always be strong. It's actually a weakness a lot of times, because it's hard to process emotions. To process emotion means you have to confront them and you have to let it hurt you for a while. That's part of processing. You have to feel the pain, right? Not doing that is actually a weakness, not a strength. It's called be strong, but it's actually not strong, right? Which is why David HaMelech, King David in Tehillim, is full of pain, which is the greatness of Tehillim. I've said this many times. It's the greatness of Tehillim. The fact that King David is okay to process his pain, whatever that means on his level, but in the way it seems to us, the way it reads at least, right? He's processing. It's painful. They're trying to undermine me. They want to kill me. I feel alone sometimes, I feel abandoned. All these things come up in Tehillim. It's not so pretty. The greatness of Tehillim is it always ends with strength. It always ends with, yes, but I have faith and I know God's going to do it and I'm going to work through it. But he feels it. There's no question that he feels it. Right? When his son died, it says in Tanakh, he didn't say, oh, all good, believe in God, it's all fine, right? He cried. He cried bitterly, it says. He had his son died in the Tanakh. It says a whole description of how he went up into the palace and he walked around and he's cried and he screamed and he was in tremendous, tremendous pain. Right? So when does, if that's the case, when does being strong become a good thing? Right? What does that mean? So I want to share with you something that happened last week, which many of you have heard before, but we spent a whole day, we had a conference of rabbis, was it last? I think it was last week. We went to Newcastle, which is interesting. Nice place, by the way. I always had this image on my mind, Newcastle is like some sort of, I don't know, dilapidated city or something, industrial place. It's actually a very nice place. Anyway, we were in the Newcastle Shul, it's turning 100 years next year, and it was quite a historic thing. We had 2 days. One day we spent with a rabbi from Melbourne called Rabbi Zirkin, a new rabbi, a very big Torah scholar, and he lectured to us on different halachic issues, which was very interesting. And the next day we spent almost the whole day with Rabbi Doron Perez, which was quite amazing. He gave us three different shirim. Most of you know, of course, that Rabbi Doron Perez is someone that he's a great speaker and all that, but he's someone who suffered a terrible, terrible loss, as unfortunately many did in Israel. He lost his son in the war in a very painful way because it turned out that his son died the first day on the 7th of October, but they didn't know. They thought he was taken hostage. They didn't know if he was taken hostage or not. It was a long time they didn't know where he was until it came out that he had died. That was one part, but then they still didn't have his body, so his body was hostage, and it took a really, really long time until they finally... So the journey was besides the unimaginable pain of losing a child, the journey was also double painful because of the whole process of getting out the child and so on. So he talks a lot about it, but he's a man of tremendous faith, right? And he talked about that he's obviously still in a lot of pain, that's very clear, but yet extremely strong, and that's the difference. Faith is very good, and faith is excellent, and faith expresses itself in different ways depending on the journey. With time, we learn to live with the pain. It doesn't go away necessarily, but we learn to live with the pain and to become more functional and do better things. But it takes time. Faith can be there from day one. That's the strength that could be there, even in the face of challenge. Fundamental Jewishness is, yes, you have faith no matter where you are. But it's faith with pain, not overriding the pain. And especially in the beginning, because the pain has to be processed. It can be processed together with pain. That's one of his big things, that you can have these things together. Right? He's one of his big lines is two things together, and he's been elaborating in it and talking about it. And one of the things he shared with us, which is a famous piece of the Talmud, but he brought it out very beautifully. I'm going to read you the piece in the Talmud. The Talmud says the following. Talmud talks about the two blessings that were made by the rabbis, one for good things, one for bad things. So there's a blessing that people make, some people make when they have a child, for example, or if someone got an amazing breakthrough in business and were given a big fortune. That's what the Talmud talks about. It's called, you make the bracha, Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Haolam, HaTov VeHameitiv. We thank God for being the good one and the one who does good to others. Okay. And then there's a bracha that you make when there's real pain. Today we make it when we lose a loved one, normally when you tear your garments. And it's Baruch that we acknowledge Dayan HaEmet. It's the, right? We bless our God that he's the true judge, which means it's very painful. We don't quite understand what he's doing, but he's the ultimate judge. He knows what he's doing. Okay. Right? Which, by the way, already from the fact that there's two blessings means that they're two different feelings. They're two different journeys. One is good and one is not good. Right? And the Talmud talks about ra'ah, meaning not good in our mind, the way we see it, right? And then the Talmud comes and says quite an interesting thing. The Talmud says the following. It's based on a Mishnah. The Mishnah said, Chayav levarech, a person is obligated to make a blessing to God when something terribly evil happens, bad happens, the same that he makes on the good. That's the expression of the Mishnah. You know how the Talmud works. You have a Mishnah, which was written earlier, and then you have a Gemara, a Talmud, which explains the Mishnah. So the Talmud says, what does that mean, kashem? Just like you make on the bad, you're going to make on the good. You obviously can't say just like means it's the same blessing. It's not the same blessing. It's two separate blessings, right? One's for good and one's for things that we are not good. So the Talmud says, it means lekabelunei besimcha. That means both blessings, you make both blessings, but it means you're supposed to make it in the same way to receive it with joy. Now, what does that mean? This was his big question. What does that mean? And he said when he first looked at the Gemara, particularly after his own tragedy, he was struggling with it. What does that mean? You can't say to celebrate. No one celebrates a tragedy. You give it meaning eventually. You're resilient. You post-traumatic growth. Yes, all those things are true, but you can't say you celebrate, right? You're not going to dance when you'll dance when you say Atov V'Ameti for the good stuff. You'll say L'chaim. No one's going to throw a party when a tragedy happens, right? Yeah. Yes, that's what we're saying. But the question is, what does it mean that you do it the same way? And the Talmud seems to make it worse by saying that you got to do it by, it's a different blessing, but you got to do them both by receiving what God has given you with joy. What does that mean? It obviously can't mean joy the way we look at it for the most part, unless you're some unbelievable tzaddik or something. But for most normal people, which is most of us, what's tragic is painful. That's just the way it is, right? But a little bit has to do with the definition of joy. And there's a very telling comment. You know, the Talmud has a great famous commentator, just like the Chumash, called Rashi. And Rashi comments on that. And Rashi says, what does that mean? He says the following. He says that you've got to make the blessing even for negative things, for bad things. Belevav shalem. Very different to the word simcha. Levav shalem, a complete heart. In other words, you've got to make it with tremendous faith and acceptance. Right? So yes, faith starts right from the day one. When something terrible happens, As a Jew, we have this amazing, amazing ability to have faith right away. That doesn't mean not to have pain. This is the point, right? You can have faith, and the faith allows you to accept what happens. He spoke with, it was a very interesting day. It was quite heavy, but amazingly inspiring, not in the sense of like, conspiring, like, you know, let's dance, but inspiring of like, so uplifting, really uplifting. Because he spoke with such emunah. When to see someone in real time who's still in tremendous pain talk with such faith, it's unbelievable. I mean, we all talk faith. It's easy to talk faith at a shir. But to talk, to see someone really who's gone through himself, not like we sometimes, you know, we see other people and we find, oh, why do people suffer? We have the question. All good. But and then you can talk faith. But to see someone actually going through it, talking with such faith is really amazing. And he said, first of all, the acceptance came with a few different things. He says it was unimaginably difficult. And yet with tremendous acceptance. Acceptance, first of all, gratitude. Gratitude for the things that didn't happen. Or the things, or the good things that happened. He said he had two sons. The one was, they were both affected by the war the very first day. The one was injured, but it was ultimately a lighter injury, and he was able to heal, and he's basically okay now. And he got married a few weeks later. The famous story, he tells it a lot. Right? So many people lost more than one child in October 7th. He didn't. He's grateful. He's grateful for the things he had, other children, whatever, all the things. He says that's part of the process, to go through all the things that you are grateful for. And then he says, faith was just about tremendous acceptance, knowing that, now I'm repeating his words, okay? I'm not saying this. And his words is, and he brought different sources for this, that our expectations sometimes are too high. He says, God doesn't owe us anything. Yeah. Right? He created us, he gives us, he does things his way. And his line was also that part of our work, a part of our mission is, obviously, we pray for good, but when it doesn't come, we accept it. Belay vav shalem, with a perfect heart. Not a non-painful heart, a very painful heart, but a full heart with faith, right? And part of his idea was that you I lost my train of thought. Give me 1 second. It'll come to me. I don't know. I was going to say something. I totally forgot.
Not joy.
Not joy, yeah. So, it's, I mean, we're not expected. I mean, you know, when the Talmud says you have to sit shiva, right? Yeah. There's an interesting expression. It goes through a very stage. You know the stages of grief in the Talmud, right? And it talks about when I say shiva, because that's the part where the Talmud talks about it. It's every challenge that we have. Remember I told you that Edith Eger would say that every challenge is a form of grief. In other words, there's lots of loss of expectations. So the similar things apply, right? But the Talmud says, Shlosha yamim lipchi. The first 3 days of Shiva are designated to cry. What better proof can you have that crying is important, right? Now, obviously, not everyone cries. It's not a thing where you turn on crying, you turn it off, right? It's a concept. First 3 days, it's okay to cry. Just let yourself go, right? You don't even have to talk about the person so much. You don't have to talk about the pain. It's part of the processing. Just cry. Feel the pain. Then you can start processing, talking about it. Like in the case of a loved one that says the next few days is about talking about the person and so on, right? But total acceptance, total understanding. This is what God has done. Oh, yes. The other thing I was going to say, this is another unbelievable line that he said. Which is, I know it's things we learn about all the time. Again, to have it, someone saying it so eloquently and someone who's going through such a pain. He said, we have to understand that God, this is faith for you. He says, we have to understand that God does not live in our world. Meaning, God is not a God that we're supposed to fit into our context, to our perspective, to our paradigm. We live in His world. Right, that's what a Jew is. A Jew lives in God's world. No, God doesn't come to live in our world. Meaning, yes, God lives in our world in the sense that we bring Him into this world to make this world a godly place. But our thinking is that we live a godly world, meaning that we live in God's mind, not He doesn't come into our mind. And there are certain things about Him that we can't understand. Therefore, that's part of the acceptance, part of the faith. That right away we understand, I don't know why you've done this, God. You have a plan, I know, but I don't know it, I don't like it, and I don't understand it. But you don't owe me anything, and I live in your world. That's faith, but it doesn't come to replace the pain, right? So that's not what being strong. So being strong really means being strong with the pain, not overriding the pain, especially in the beginning, right? Now, with that kind of faith, where you make the two blessings in the same way, not with the same joy. So why is it called joy then? Why does the Talmud say simcha? Because, you know, we've talked about this before. Simcha doesn't always mean celebration. Happiness doesn't always mean celebration. It doesn't mean dancing. We don't dance every day, and yet we're supposed to be happy every day. Because happy expresses itself in different times and different places. Happiness is more an inner feeling of contentment, of peace of mind. And that's why Rashi says over here, simcha doesn't mean the same in both places. Yes, when an unbelievable thing happens, when a child is born, you make hatov amiti, you make the blessing. Yes, you gather, you make a kiddush, and you say l'chaim, you celebrate. That's what simcha means then, but simcha means something else here. It means levav shalem, a complete heart. I accept it. I totally accept it, which is why, and by the way, and we don't say to delay the faith. That's not what it means. Because us Jews, we can do two things at the same time. We can process pain, and we can also have unbelievable faith at the same time, which is why, God forbid, when someone loses a loved one, right away, Kaddish begins. And Kaddish, as I've said before, I think, people don't know this, Kaddish has nothing to do with someone that's passed away. Absolutely nothing to do. It doesn't even talk about death. Do you know that? Right? It talks about belief in God. That's all it is. Glorifying God, praising God, Yitkadal, Yitkadash, His name should be holy and great and exalted and so on and so forth. And the coming of Mashiach, where God's presence will be completely revealed. That's what Kaddish is. Why? Because we have this amazing ability. As soon as something unbelievably painful happens, it's still very painful and it should be painful and we have to breathe and we have to process, and yet we can still say Yitkadal, Yitkadash. That's what it is. That's being strong. It's different from being strong than being stoic and non-emotional and burying our feelings, right? That kind of faith and that kind of acceptance leads to, eventually, the ability to live with the pain and to be functional with the pain and to give the pain meaning and to have post-traumatic growth. That's actually an outcome of the faith. But it's the outcome of the faith together with the pain. Because if you never process the pain, you can't grow from the pain. You can't give the pain meaning if you never experienced it. That's why it's so healthy to actually, yes, process the pain. Now, of course, eventually it has to be channeled. Not that the pain will go away, but it has to be channeled into something positive. That's what human beings do. And that's why the same Talmud says such harsh words about someone who doesn't mourn also says harsh words about someone that defines themselves by their mourning and prolongs it and is never able to let go. That's why in the Talmud, it's so important, the stages of growth. And that's why we have a concept where if someone finishes Shiva, we say they're getting up from Shiva. It's not just about the physical thing that you don't sit in a low stool anymore. That's not what it means. It means you get up, you go, you move to the next stage. And sometimes it's hard. That's why there's a custom. We need other people. There's a custom about some people when they sit Shiva, they have a whole ceremony how they finish the Shiva, where someone actually comes and commands them to get up. Like, get up, you know? Why? Because sometimes it's hard to move from one emotion to another or to a different level. We need assistance, we need support, but yet it's so important. But even that moving from one pain level of pain to another doesn't mean getting rid of the pain. It means learning how to channel the pain. And it takes time. There's the shloshim and there's the year and so on and so forth, right? And then, you know, I've told you this many times when I came back from Israel, May last year, where that line that we were taught in Israel that someone said, we are broken but unbreakable. Again, it's the opposite that comes because you have conviction. You accept it and you're strong and you fight back, but you're still in pain. And then he shared with us, because it's before Rosh Hashanah, I'm going to do the same thing because it's such a beautiful thing that he pointed out. And that is, you know, the highlight of Rosh Hashanah this year, only one day because we're not doing it on Shabbat, but the highlight is the Shofar, right? Really important to hear the Shofar, the second day of Rosh Hashanah. So, and we know that the Shofar has different sounds. Some of the sounds are sounds that represent, you know, the shofar is like a cry. So we have the smooth sounds, I've shared this with you before, the tkiya on either side, that long, smooth sounding sign, which is a part of resilience. And then we have the broken sounds, right? There's two kinds of broken sounds. One is called shvarim, which are broken but a bit longer, like tu, 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 right? Then you have the trua, which is like tu, 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 that's all right. You know, but the beauty of Hebrew, right, I often say this, is that some similar words mean different things. And one of the ideas of Rosh Hashanah is that we turn the negative into a positive and we live these two things together, that something might be negative or painful, but yet we channel it into something amazingly positive, which I've taught you many times is the idea of the honey. Honey comes from a stinging bee and yet it produces the amazing sweetness, right? So let's have a look at Shvarim and Trua. Shvarim, what does the word shvarim mean? Shever, shvira in Hebrew, is broken. Yeah? But interestingly enough, it has another translation. I'll tell you where it comes from. In the story of Yosef, when Yosef went down to Egypt, and he was lost from his family for many years, and then God orchestrated that he became the viceroy of Egypt, and then a famine broke out. And the famine wasn't only in Egypt, it was the surrounding countries as well. And Yaakov and his sons ran out of food. But in Egypt, there was plenty of food because that was the whole dream interpretation that Joseph gave Pharaoh, that you can have 7 years of plentiful. And what you should do is you should store stuff. You should store wheat. And you know, he gave him a plan. And that's what he did. And Yosef was in control of that. And he was providing Egypt and the surrounding areas with food during the days of famine. And it says in the Chumash a very beautiful thing. It says, Vayar Yaakov. When Yaakov and his family living in Israel ran out of food, they said, it says, Vayar Yaakov, Yaakov saw, Ki yesh shever b'mitzrayim. There is produce in Mitzrayim. The word shever also means produce. And the commentary is saying that there was like an unintentional prophecy. When he says that Yaakov saw that he saw there was shever in Mitzrayim, on a simple level, there was a reference to this food, this wheat, this barley. We can go buy food there and make bread. But also means he saw that he hadn't lost Yosef completely. There's something there that's waiting for him. Something amazing, something unbelievably positive is waiting in Egypt, which ultimately was the revelation of Joseph and the reunification between Yaakov and Yosef. And those last 17 years that Yaakov lived with Yosef, which were, the Torah describes, the most beautiful years that Yaakov had, right? But the word that he says there, there's produce, there's different words in produce in Hebrew, but the word that's written in the Chumash is shever, same word as shvarim. So the same word means broken, but also means produce, good things, sustenance, right? Rosh Hashanah particularly, and these days, bring those both things together. There's the reflection of the pain, there's also the reflection of our own shortcomings. There's a certain level of a broken heart that comes in, but we coexist with that with a tremendous hope. We know there's, in that brokenness, there's produce, in that same word. Ultimately, we channel. Ultimately, we're able to transform. Ultimately, we're resilient. Ultimately, we do move on from the pain, because we've processed the pain. And we've processed it with a tremendous emunah, a tremendous faith. Faith with the pain, ultimately, that's the catalyst for that pain becoming not just pain, but becoming something amazing. At the same time, pain never goes away, but the two things remain together and becomes very positive, and we give it meaning and hope and resilience and strength and so on. And the funny thing is that exactly the same thing is with the word truah. Truah, which is also the sounds. There's a, in Tehillim, there's a pasuk which says, talks about defeating enemies or breaking an enemy. And it talks about tar'aim, the same etymology, the same root. Truak mean to break something. And truah also comes from the word re'ut, friendship, closeness. One of the things we've talked about throughout the year was the idea of understanding that God is such a hard thing to process, but it's so true nevertheless. And I think that's particularly comforting if you get your head around it, which is that even when we experience tremendous pain, God is with us, he's close to us in that pain. Part of the emunah, he's with us in that pain. That's such a difficult thing to, I know it's a painful thing to, because the obvious question is, then why does he just take it away if he's with us, right? He doesn't, because we're not his, that's our world, but his world is different. But we do know that he's with us tremendously closely. And therefore that's, again, those two things coming together, trua and re'ut, to break, but friendship, closeness are the same thing. The only thing we have to remember is, and this is the balance, right? Often the world understands things in extremes, the pendulum, right? So we say one of the problems that happens today is that people look back at previous generations where people were more prone to be stoic and not process their emotions. It's true. And it wasn't always a good thing. Sometimes they didn't have a choice because it was like just part of survival. Like they were too busy surviving. Didn't have time to process the pain. But okay. And we look back and say, okay, so we've got to process our pain. So what do? We go overboard. And the danger is that processing the pain results in being victims of pain. And that's where it all falls apart. Where people today define themselves by their pain, and that's dangerous. So we talk about being strong. That is part of it. Being strong does not mean not to process. It means yes to process. Being strong means to cry. Being strong means to be vulnerable. Being strong means to reach out for help and to grow through the process of feeling the pain. But the same, as I said before, the same Talmud says you can't mourn too much because you might start defining yourself by your pain and you become a victim of your pain. That becomes your whole definition, right? I'll just throw this in, by the way. I think it's a bit of a collective problem as well. I've noticed something just over the last few months. Maybe it's controversial, maybe not, I don't know. But, you know, there's a lot being done, you know, the Royal Commission and advocacy and stuff and news and all that, right? And there's so much going on about around anti-Semitism that I fear that the Jewish community, I'll talk about it more in a different time, but I fear the community is starting, we're starting to define our Jewishness by anti-Semitism. And that's a big problem. Because that's not the Yiddishkeit that we're given, that's not Judaism. It's a fact, it's a reality, and we've got to deal with it, and we've got to process it and deal with it and have the advocates, right? But there's so many discussions around anti-Semitism and about, it's actually, it's a trap, right? We need to be careful. Yiddishkeit is about connecting to God, it's about the beauty and love of God, it's about the beauty of bringing godliness into the world, it's about the Torah, it's about the mitzvot, it's not about people that hate us. They do hate us, we've got to do something about it. And make us stronger maybe, and we have to learn from it and have faith and all that kind of stuff. All that has to happen, but it shouldn't become what we define ourselves as. And in individual pain, it's the same thing, right? So not to be a victim, because that's not what it's about. Because again, if we start the pain, if we process the pain, but we do it with faith, then we protect it that it won't happen, if we do it properly. Because it's all about God, not about us. And therefore we know what God's will is to feel it, to feel the pain, to accept the pain with faith, and not to be defined by it, and to eventually use it out for something that can be channeled into meaning and purpose. So it goes back to the whole point of how in Judaism, so again, being strong to ignore pain is escapism, it's unhealthy, it's no good. We have to do the pain, but we have to do it the way we do it, which is to do it with faith. And we do it with faith, then you use it in the right way, you process the pain in the correct way. Feeling it, processing, feeling it, crying, all that stuff, but also eventually then with it together, holding those two things, turning the brokenness into friendship, turning the brokenness into produce, into hope, into greater things. And that's what it's about. And that's what Rosh Hashanah is about coming to the new year and reconnecting with God and discarding the negative things of the previous year on one hand, but on the other hand, actually not just discarding everything, but it's taking the negativity, our failings, and turning them into something positive. That sort of combination, yeah.
I'm just wondering, these five categories were made from that questionnaire.
Yeah.
What kind of questions did people answer that gave them be strong? Like what kind of
I don't know. I should go back and look at my survey. No, it was clever questions. Like, do you spend extra time in the office? I don't know what it was, but
really, is that all?
No, there were lots of questions. No, these personality things are very cleverly done. They're very scientifically done. So I don't know. It's hard to know. Which, when you answer the question, you don't know what they're going to come up with.
Because it's like, coming to this category, you wonder what do people think, what
were
your answers. Anyhow,
yeah, no, it's interesting. Don't forget next week, a bigger one and hopefully a nice one. And
thanks very much.
See you next week.
Bye.